Hey everybody, it's the Pure Nintendo KoopaCast, and thanks for listening. We're continuing our Zelda discussions, and today or tonight or whenever you're listening to us, we're going to be talking about the Phantom Hourglass, which is an interesting Zelda game, so let's get right into it. As always, we have Justin,
Hey everyone.
and we have Gemma.
Hey, how you going?
All right, guys. Oh, and I should say, as usual, we are going to get into some spoilers. But like I've said for every Zelda game up to this point, if you haven't already played it, well, maybe check it out.
Yep.
See if you can find a DS copy or download it on the virtual console. So, Phantom Hourglass, a direct sequel to The Wind Waker, which is all one of our favorites, if not our favorite. I was thinking, do you think that helped the Phantom Hourglass because it was a sequel game people loved? Or do you think it hurt it because maybe their expectations were too high? What do you think, Jemmy? You want to start us off?
It's a really good question. I hadn't really considered that before. I think it would have helped it, to be honest. Although I think when we talked about Wind Waker, didn't we say it was a bit of a like people didn't necessarily like that one straight away? Like it was kind of like it took a while for people to warm up to that one. So I don't know. But then by the time this one came out, maybe it was well received enough that people wanted more of that. I think it would have helped it though, overall. I think the continuation of the style, the cartoon style, and the characters that we kind of knew and loved from that game, I think it helped. Yeah, I think it helped overall. I mean, I like a sequel. There's not a lot of direct sequels in the Zelda universe. You know, they're all kind of linked, and there's a timeline and all that sort of thing. But it's usually not classified as a direct sequel, is it? That's pretty rare. So I
Yeah,
think.
I think so. I mean, even
Yeah, I
games
think
that
even.
are sequels are like Zelda 2 is sort of direct sequel, but I mean, it plays so different. Like, do you really think
Yeah,
of it that way?
totally. Yeah, and that's the same with this one as well, isn't it? I mean, the DS was a very different system to play a game on, and we'll talk about obviously that as well, the style and how it was used very differently. but I think it was still to its benefit overall. I mean, I think we all agreed that we liked The Wind Waker. That was one of my favorite kind of 3D entries, and this is obviously a different, it's top down as well. So if you're looking for an exact copy of it or exact direct sequel, like you said with Zelda 2, this is presented very differently. So are you thinking people might have jumped in thinking they were getting another Wind Waker and then like, oh, what is this? This is not what I was expecting. I don't know, but the sales kind of speak otherwise. I'd say the good sales would make the case that it was well received in terms of being a sequel. I also think it was the timing. I was thinking about the timing of this as well, because this is what, 2007, right?
Yeah, so that's well, like 4 years after the Wind Waker.
Yeah, so kind of the DS was like at its prime, wasn't it? Like this was before the iPhone kind of thing, or around the same time as the iPhone came out. People were still not smartphone users to the extent they are today. So the DS was kind of the thing to play in a handheld mode. Like that's where all the handheld games were at. So I think having a direct sequel to a popular game on a console, on a handheld system that was super popular, I think that was a good thing. That's my opinion. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I think it definitely helped it. I mean, always being a handheld Zelda game, even just on a handheld system, they always sell really well. And like you said, this was kind of before, the iPhone and a lot of smartphones, really kind of took off, and mobile gaming kind of took off a bit more. So yeah, I think that definitely helped it a little bit. I think by this point, Trev, Wind Waker, there is that typical like Zelda cycle where it almost seems like the current Zelda doesn't get realized for its greatness until the subsequent one comes out, and people are like, oh, that wasn't so bad, or oh yeah, that was really good, or I
Or
think,
vice versa.
or vice versa, yeah. But I think that generally, like once Wind Waker came out, the initial reception I think was honestly that, from going from that Space World 2000 demo to when the next time it was shown with the cel-shaded cartoony style, you know, that really that was where that reception was like, oh man, I don't know about this. And but I think once the game came out and in the 2-3 years, you know, that followed, you know, people really were like, oh yeah, this game reviewed really well. This is a great Zelda game. Yes, it has a different art style, but this is Zelda, you know? So yeah, I think by the time this came out, it was, I think that's, it, you almost, the fact that they did a sequel to Wind Waker, you know, almost speaks volumes that they felt like it was popular enough. The Wind Waker did well enough that they're like, hey, let's revisit it. I think some of the decision was probably, you know, hardware related. They're like, well, we can't do a realistic art style on the DS. This cartoony style that we did with the Wind Waker, you know, lends itself more to something that doesn't have as much power like the DS. So I think it worked out in probably a couple different ways, but
yeah, good points, I think.
Yeah. I was thinking too when you said, you know, Gemma, about like, I think I had a flip phone maybe back then, and I was probably playing Snake on my Nokia phone or brick phone, whatever it was. So if you were looking for real gaming, I mean, it was the DS or maybe the PSP, I guess, was semi-popular back then. But but anyway, back to Phantom Hourglass proper, people probably weren't expecting GameCube visuals on the DS, but they might have been expecting traditional control, and maybe were surprised when they caught wind that Phantom Hourglass was going to be all touchscreen driven stylus. And that has its pros and its cons, but I want to ask you guys what you thought of the touchscreen method, and if you think it's a method that would maybe even work for a future Zelda games. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I know the, you know, touchscreen controls, they're not quite as controversial as, you know, Skyward Sword's motion controls, but you know, I still think people, you know, maybe don't give it as much credit. I did like a lot of the things they did with the touchscreen with the stylus. They had, I think you could actually like map out your route, you know, like of where your ship was going. You could take a lot of fun notes on the maps. One thing, do you guys remember when the DS came out? I think the DS launched with this. I don't know if it was a separate, do you guys remember? It was like a little thumb stylus. Do you remember that?
I do, the little strap.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, it was a little strap. It could, like on the one end, it could strap to like a little loop that was on the DS. And then the other end would like wrap around your thumb, and then you're basically just moving your thumb around the touchscreen. So it was almost like, I remember I thought I played Phantom Hourglass that way, but maybe that was later and it was another game. But I did feel like that made it a little bit easier than just, because it was a little odd, you know, holding a stylus like a pencil and moving around to where you wanted Link to go, you know. But if, I don't know, maybe I'm misremembering that. Maybe that came out later. But yeah, I don't remember the touchscreen controls really detracting. I thought it was really cool to just kind of like tap and slice and, you know, swipe across the screen and interacting with things. It was very tangible, you know. Remember Nintendo was doing all of that stuff. It was like touch generation, right? They had all of these touch generation games. It was just really cool. I thought it was really fun, you know. I thought Nintendo was kind of forward thinking there with the touch, even though it wasn't multi-touch like the iPhone and subsequent smartphones ended up being. You know, it was still really compelling to have that interaction directly with something on the screen, right? Even if it was on the touch screen below. But I thought they were fun.
I totally agree. I think, yeah, when you first play it, it's a little, not exactly jarring, but it's like you want to move Link with your, you know, D-pad, right? That's just the default, you know, you want to walk him around. And at first it's like, oh no, that's not how this thing works. You got to use the stylus. but it takes a matter of minutes, and then it's like, it's pretty intuitive, I think. I liked it. There's a couple of times when maybe the stylist, you know, because you're leading him around and you might jump off the edge by accident, or I did that a few times, or he just goes where you don't want him to go. But I think for the most part, yeah, I found it quite intuitive and very easy to pick up. And for the most part, yeah, really fun. And I think you're right. It's kind of, it is that touchscreen generation, but it is that, and it was forward thinking. I thought that too. Like, it's pre-smartphone era gaming where we all use touchscreens now. Like, it's, this was Nintendo trying something new. And even though it's a stylus and not, you know, your finger necessarily, it was a cool way to try something new. So they took the Wind Waker style, but they completely changed the way it was done. You know, it was not just was a top down, but it was a completely different input. So it's like a different game, just with similar characters and a similar style that we'd kind of already knew and loved. So yeah, I think it was really good. And it, I think, as I mentioned to you guys outside of this podcast, my kids who weren't around when this game came out have played it with me recently while I've been recapping on it, revisiting, and they've just loved it. Like, they picked it up so quickly. And it was just super intuitive to them and super fun for them. So nice. I think it was kind of a way to bring more people in. Like, and I don't know, did Nintendo know that's how things were going, like with touch screens? Like, did they know that was the way of the future? I don't know. What do you think, Trev? What's your opinion?
Well, Nintendo has often been forward thinking. Right from the beginning with the NES controller, I mean, that was so different from like an Atari joystick, and it became the default, the standard. So, touch screen, which seemed maybe foreign in 2007, now, you know, is quaint in 2021. It was fun. One of my favorite things was throwing the boomerang. I mean, you could almost throw it like Captain America's shield. You could just trace it in any crazy direction, and you know, Link could throw it, and you know, so it defied a lot of physics, but it was just fun.
Yeah, and the bomb cheers were good as well, because you could map out where they go, through little tunnels and stuff. That was cool. I like that too.
This game's got the best use of bomb cheers by far.
Yeah.
I didn't like bomb cheers in like that Ocarina of Time mini game or. You know, things like that. It drove me nuts. But in Phantom Hourglass, it had that direct control. And that was just, that's a good point, too. And Justin alluded to it, too, about, you know, with the map. I mean, you could, you know, trace sail paths for your boat. You could take notes. I really like taking notes, you know. I've read some people are like, oh, it's like cheating, but I mean, Nintendo designed it that way. How is that different from writing it on a piece of paper?
I hadn't heard that. I love it. That's how they designed it. It's so cool. You know what else I love about it? I love when you pause it and the screen swaps, you know, the top goes to the bottom so that you can draw on your map or whatever.
Yeah.
Or your dungeon or whatever. And you can see Link in the top now, and he's got his little map out, and he's drawing, like he's writing.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. It's like, I just love that little attention to detail.
Yeah.
It's a cute little touch.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it works really well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go, sorry.
No, sorry. One of the things I liked on when we're talking about the map is I really liked how they handled finding a treasure in Phantom Hourglass, because in Wind Waker, you look for the beam of light, you line up, and then it was basically a passive cutscene. Bring it up, but in Phantom Hourglass, it's hands-on, you know, because you're grappling. It can only take so much damage. You have to get it down. You have to avoid, you know, enemies and bombs. And you get too many hits, you got to get it repaired. It felt like I was more engaged looking for treasure.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the excitement of what was going to be in the treasure chest. Like, is it going to be more time for my, sands in my hourglass, or is it going to be?
So.
Yeah, that was the best. I'm like, yes. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, or even finding islands that weren't on the map, like
Yeah, exactly.
You get a piece of C chart and be like, hey, wait, what's that? And it's an island that's shaped like a Nintendo DS or some such device.
I do remember the first time I did the one of those treasure mini games, and I received some damage. I was being a bit careless, or a bit. I'm like, oh yeah, I can speed through this. And I thought it would, you've got your hearts, and you know that you're taking damage. But I thought it would reset again the next time I did it, but it doesn't. So you definitely have to get it repaired if you use up all your lives in the anchor thing. Yeah, the grappling hook. So that was it's like permanent. If you damage it, yeah, you've got to go back and visit your friend to fix it. So yeah, definitely more engaging that way. You have to take more care. Don't speed through it like I did.
Yeah. Wait, I thought in an earlier podcast you said you were the type that didn't speed through things. Like you get distracted and go kind of jumped off and
I do, that is true. I think with this one though, it sort of reminded me of I don't know, like Tetris or something. It just felt like something's falling down and I can just like power through. Yeah, I can dodge these things. I don't know. It just felt like a challenge. Yeah. But this game is very good for distractions though, you're right, because when you're sailing, and Wind Waker was the same way, when you're sailing around, you find something out there on the ocean, you're like, well, what is that? I need to go and see what that is. Like, stick to the mission. Yeah.
And of course, we can't talk about cruising on the ocean without talking about Alain Beck, who is Link's companion, one of his companions for this adventure. And Linebeck, I tell you, he's humorous. He's not very courageous, but at least until the very end, But what'd you guys think? Did he grow on you? Could you take him or leave him?
Yeah, I
Well, I
think,
liked him. Yeah.
yeah.
You go, Justin.
No, yeah, he was a lot of fun. I don't like, I guess he's kind of the, he's not really your companion character. I guess maybe he's more of like a King of Red Lions, right? He's kind of a, he's not like the assist character, like a Navi or a Fi or something like that. But
Yeah.
but
What was the
yeah.
fairy in this game? It was like Celia or
See,
something like
yeah,
that? Yeah,
Sela
yeah.
something. Yeah, and then they had, there's some blue, like a blue and red one, wasn't there? Like a,
Oh yeah, there was a
Yeah, yeah,
three
yeah.
of them.
There's a couple that you rescue along the way. Yeah.
But yeah, Linebeck, he was, he had some endearing qualities. I think it was kind of cool to have, you mentioned like he wasn't very courageous, Trev. So I wonder if they deliberately did that where, Link is the Triforce of Courage, right? Or so I wonder if having Linebeck along has that, that opposite there, just to, to tempt Link to like, well, maybe we shouldn't go to that Link, or just provide that like opposite alternative perspective on it. I don't know, but yeah, I
And maybe
like
it
it.
makes you feel more courageous as the adventurer. Like, no, man, I want to do this. We're going to save the world here.
Come on,
Yeah.
Linebacker, get on board.
At least he did go. Like, I mean, he was in it for the money, I suppose, at the beginning, but he went along with it. Yeah, I thought he was funny. I think there's a lot of humor in this game. I really enjoyed the humor, and he's definitely a big part of it. So.
I remember, I think it was a cut scene, maybe with Link talking to his grandpa there or whatever, but and Linebeck's leaning on Tetra, who is, stone, and he like knocks her over and he tries to quickly pick her up. Like, oh, I hope nobody saw that. And he's got that girl chasing him around the high seas, Was it
trying to
Jolene? Was that it?
Jolene,
I
yes.
think so.
Yeah, and he'd always hide in the barrel, so Link would have to fire off. I
Yeah, he
think
was good.
Glenbeck is, even if he doesn't win you over right away, I think by the end, he's he has his moments.
Yeah, he provide definitely provides the comical element, keeps it kind of light. Yeah.
And of course, when we're not sailing the oceans with Linebeck, we are in dungeons. And we can spend a lot of time on one dungeon in particular, but before I get to that, I want to talk about if we have any favorite dungeons. The dungeons, because of the top-down nature, maybe don't stand out quite as much as like Wind Waker dungeons, but did you have any that you liked in particular, or were they all good? Were they all okay?
I liked all of them. I really liked all of them. I don't want to steal the one that I know is your favorite, Trev, but I probably like that one the best as well. But I actually really enjoyed all of them. I think they were simpler in a way. Like, it's not a hard game, but it's not like a breeze. Like, it's a fun game with some cool puzzles, but it's not taxing. Like, it's not, it's more of a enjoyable ride for me anyway, I found it to be. I really liked the ghost ship. I think that's a standout, just because it was a bit different and you had to rescue those sisters who then, well, we're not talking about bosses yet, but you know, we know what happens there.
That was a feel.
Yeah, it did. It was a different feel, different look. I mean, yeah, the Goron Temple, as you'll probably mention, Trev, is a standout as well, but I won't go into why because that's your thing. What else? I think the Temple of Wind was a good one. I remember that being pretty fun. I really liked all of them. Yeah, I really did. The Ice Temple, they're all really, really good, just in different ways. Nice. I don't know, it's hard to pick a favorite. I think the favorite would be probably the Goron Temple, to be honest. But yeah, I did enjoy them. And we're not talking about the Temple of the Ocean King just yet. We're going to save
that. I mean, we can if it's one of your favorites.
Well, it's controversial.
Yep.
It is and it isn't. Like, it's great, it's big, and it's very, the puzzles are great. Like, it's really well thought out, and there's lots of enemies that are, you know, you can't even beat them, you know, they're very difficult, you just have to kind of sneak around. So I love that element, but obviously it's very repetitive when you have to go back over and over and over and over, so that got a bit daunting. But overall, I mean I do enjoy it. I just didn't want to do it again. I'm just like, I've done this 3 times. I don't want to do it again. And I ended up doing it because I've been playing it recently, like I said, and I went and did it. And you know, there is a sort of halfway point at some point. You can leave and come back and you skip the first, whatever, 8 levels or something. But I didn't have a good time. So I did it again. I'm like, no, I've only got like 8 minutes on my thing. I need, or 6 minutes, I think it was. I'm like, that's not going to be enough. I need more time. So I went and did it again really well and thoroughly and got like 16 minutes or something left for the rest of it. So I was happy with that. I was like, I can do this. It's a good achievement. But yeah, just doing it over and over was a bit slightly annoying, I think, for me. But I still love the game.
So diplomatic.
Yeah.
I know. It's hard to fault this game. I really like it. But that was just like, I've had enough of it. What do you guys think?
Oh man, yeah, I really did enjoy pretty much all of them. Yeah, I guess maybe the exception is it was mostly just going back to that Temple of the Ocean King. You know, obviously you can skip down different floors and you end up unlocking certain things. You can kind of go back to, but it just felt it's just kind of that same repetition, like in Breath of the Wild. Shrines, like after a while it's like, okay, I'm seeing a similar theme or motif through several of them, you know, like they're still fun, but you kind of want to change a pace, and Zelda games usually they do that really well, right, with these very themed dungeons, elemental dungeons, right? So you're rarely stopping at a similar themed dungeon throughout the game. So I do remember thinking that was a little repetitive, but yeah, I think I like the Fire Temple. I think that was a really fun one. A lot of fun little puzzles, unlocking keys by, you know, doing little star patterns with your boomerang path, and you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of really fun unlocks, and you know, even the boss in that one was a lot of fun, but we're not getting to the bosses yet, but yeah, definitely the Temple of the Ocean King was not the favorite, but yeah, I don't know, what do you think, Trev?
Well,
I think you're being equally diplomatic there, Justin.
I know.
I ain't gonna be diplomatic. It
Good.
was no. Well,
You tell us how it is, Trev.
Yeah.
well, first to start positively, the Goron Temple was, I think, my favorite dungeon by a fair margin. And mainly, what I liked is you had Gon Goron with you as a playable character, and you could roll around. And of course,
Yeah, that's cool.
that's a nod in a way to Wind Waker, because in Wind Waker's later dungeons, you could play as Medley or Makar for stretches. So I just like having someone in tow. I think it makes for a more engaging time. And yeah, Temple of the Ocean King is just, it's one of those ideas, maybe on paper it works, but then in execution, I feel like, because by the time you can skip like sections, you've already replayed them several times. So you need to be like, I just kind of think of like the hubris of Nintendo, be like, this is so much fun. People are going to want to replay it over and over and over again. And yeah, you could do shortcuts and you came back stronger, but at a certain point, it's just, it felt like padding. And I feel like, and Justin, you can maybe correct me if I'm wrong on this because I haven't actually played it, but I feel like Spirit Tracks fixed that. Even though you went back to a central dungeon, you weren't redoing like the same floors.
They definitely address that. In Spirit
So, I mean,
Tracks.
kudos to them for recognizing, what was
Sure.
probably like the most universally disliked thing.
Yeah, because I think it would have been better if you didn't have to do each level, because you did what you do like level, one and two, maybe three or something, and then you go off to somewhere else. Then you come back and do one, two, three, or four, or five, whatever it is. And each time you go a bit further, which is fine, but why couldn't you just start at level four,
Yeah,
or level six, or whatever?
that was the thing for me is like
Yeah.
you could still kind of skip down or like you could get down there faster, but it didn't just let you go to where you were, So.
Yeah, because I had made some notes on my map, but by the time I came back again, I was like, I don't remember what that means. I just drew random arrows here and there. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So I don't remember. I didn't take good enough notes. It's like, when you take notes in a lecture theater or something like at uni or college, and then you come back to it, you're like, what does that
Did I
mean?
write this?
Yeah. And at the
We
time, you're
needed
like, these hardly make
DS
sense.
XL, XL, XL. Like, so you can really fill up the screen. Yeah, but I did like the Phantom Hourglass component, though. You know how there's the safety areas, and then there's those the danger areas, and the time runs out. Like, that was a pretty cool idea overall. And I suppose that's why they made you go back to the beginning, because you had to use up the time that you'd gained, and you got a little bit extra time with each boss. So then you had to go and make that work for the next couple levels of the Ocean King Temple. I
Like you
did
said,
like
good
the
on
stealth.
paper. Yeah.
I did like the stealth. I'll give it that. But there just weren't, if you're gonna go back to a dungeon, there has to be like pronounced differences. Like I mentioned in Wind Waker how much I like the Forsaken Fortress, because the first time you play through, you get a sneak, but then you go back and you're strong and experienced and you can lay waste to the enemies and it feels different. Felt like
True.
Ocean King, by and large, felt the same every time I played it. So
Yeah, like you could eventually, when you get the arrows, you can shoot the phantoms, but they don't die. They just kind of get knocked out for a bit, right? So
By that point, you're so far into the game, it's like,
Yeah,
anyway.
it's almost challenging your resolve to finish. But let's see how let's see how committed they are to finishing this.
It is. First time I played it, I didn't actually beat the game. I've beaten it a few times since, but the first time I did, it just wore me down.
I wouldn't. I don't
Temple of the
blame.
Ocean King, that was the real enemy in Phantom Hourglass.
Yeah, right. I
I
wonder
don't
if
blame
that's
you.
why, because I was looking at the Metacritic score, because it's like 90. It's pretty highly rated, and I love it. Like I said, it's up there for me. But that's the critic score, but then the user score is like 7.6 or something. And I wonder if that's why. Like, are the users kind of a bit more honest and like, yeah, I don't like that Temple of the Ocean King. Whereas critically, like, this game looks great, it plays well, it's intuitive, it's got this new kind of touch feature. Mm-hmm. And I, because we're kind of critics and users, right? Like we review games, but we also play games. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I wonder where does it too fit? If the critics had like a walkthrough or something, because sometimes like review codes, and if they're longer games, mm-hmm. be like, oh, here's like a cheat sheet or.
Yep.
So maybe the critics had, oh, here's a map of the Ocean King and here's notes on every floor. And mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that could be true.
Yeah.
Or maybe they didn't have to play the whole thing. They just had to play half of it to get enough to review it or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's true. I think I got about 2/3, maybe 3/4 before I gave up. So.
And also, too, when you review a game, you kind of almost have the broader picture of games that are on that system, you know, and they're like, they're almost reviewing like, hey, this is a great game for this system. Like it's one of the best games you can buy on the DS. And so, you know, they almost have that context to, you know, whereas like a consumer, they're like, I don't care. You know, I'm playing this. Is this worth my time? Is it going to be fun? You know, there's almost different metrics,
reviews were done in 2007, whereas the user reviews, do they keep coming, right? People can do it today, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
I assume.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have
should
a broader...
Should we go on and make our own reviews? Yeah. What do they call it, Metacritic bombing? Or?
Hey, what's the opposite of bombing? Metacritic... I don't know. Metacritic planting, no, you're not destroying, you're creating, you're, I don't know.
Blooming or blossoming.
Blossoming, yeah. We'll add positive reviews.
Mm-hmm. It will be like Homer as the food critic. We love everything.
Yes. Yeah. The food was not undelicious.
Our worst review will get 7 thumbs up.
Yes. It's no 8 thumbs. Well, I knew it's 8 thumbs up.
I knew we could talk about the Temple of the Ocean King for a long time, but I do want to, Justin mentioned him, but I want to talk about more some of the boss fights, because I feel like they really made clever use of the dual screen, and I feel like that's something Nintendo really did well, taking advantage of like a lot of the DS kind of features, whether it's the touch screen, dual screen, microphone. I'll throw it out to you guys. What do you think of the boss fights in general, and or even if you have a favorite?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they did take very good advantage of the system. And the bosses were really good. I think the standouts for me, I think I mentioned the sisters, the three, was it the Diabolical Cubist sisters? I liked that fight. That was kind of tough as well. Like, you have to volley the magic back to them, so they're shooting at you and then you got to hit it back. You got to time that quite well. Mm-hmm. And there's 4 of them, I think, is that right? So you take them down one at a time, and then the last two, although especially the last one, they're quite fast, and you have to volley it like a bunch of times before it finally hits her. And you don't really even interact directly with them. She's on the top screen, you're on the bottom screen, so you're not slashing with your sword, not slashing the enemy with your sword, you're just, you know, volleying these magic beams back. I thought that was a really good one. And the other one I really liked was probably the two-headed dragon, I think, Gleok in the Temple of Ice.
Yeah.
I think that's the other one that's kind of there on the top screen and you're on the bottom screen again. What did you have to do with that one? Was it the grappling hook? You had to send it? Oh, I can't remember now. I only played this like 2 weeks ago. You had to draw the head in or something, I think. And then when the head was in close, you could slash at it. And then this water came in and flooded the area, and it kind of tilted a little the screen, like the perspective changed a little bit, which was cool. And I think you had to jump up, because the first time the water came in, I'm like, why is this water hurting me? It's just water. But you got to kind of jump up on that little peg that's there, I think. Oh, that's what you got to do. You got to attach the peg to their head or something like that, right? And it bounces back their fire or ice, whatever they're shooting at you.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. And it was clever, because you had to work out what to do. And then you got to do it like 3 or 4 times, whatever it is. And then you get to slash the head. And yeah, it was a fun one and tricky, but not undoable. But yeah, really fun one for me. Thought they were pretty clever overall.
That's a homework critique there. The bosses were not undoable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Me being diplomatic again.
That's all right.
Well, you know, some like Skyward Sword, there were some really hard bosses in that one. I died a bunch of times. And I think I might have died in one of the boss battles here. Which one was it? Probably might have been the sisters. I can't remember now. One of them got me. I had to do it again. But generally I made it through with one, just in one go. So, you know, they were doable for me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I liked the Gliok. I think it's always nostalgic for me too. I love, I think I've mentioned it before in some of the past Zeldas, that I love those types of bosses, the fire ice ones, going back to Link to the Past. But I did like that, Trev, you were mentioning where you could roll around when you're in the Goron mines, and it's not called a Dodongo, but it's something like that.
Oh, the
Dongorongo
or something.
Dongorongo, yeah. Something like that. That was.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That one had a lot of variety to it, it seemed like. And you did have to roll around and kind of team up with, your
Yeah,
your
that was tricky, actually.
And it also, again, I have that nostalgia with the very first Zelda where, you know, you're putting the bombs in front of the Dodongos to take them out. I think. It also had like a little bit of a, didn't it have a little bit of a fake out where you think you beat it and it comes back or something? It's like lying down, and I thought that was kind of fun.
I think, and that by that time your little helper had left and you had to finish him off by yourself. I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like little surprises like that. You know, that's
yeah, that was good. I'm like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And then your friend runs off. I'm like, hey, where are you going?
Yeah, it's like, oh, is this thing just toying with me? Like it knows that, you know, maybe I can't beat it alone. And you know, anyways, but yeah, that was a fun battle.
Yeah, the last time I played Phantom Hourglass, first time I played it was on the DS, and I still have that. But played it. Alongside Jen, and we played on the virtual console on the Wii U, which of course the emulation has, you know, some challenges trying to map the touchscreen.
Yeah.
So for one of the bosses, I can't remember if it was maybe the Cyclone boss, like I actually, one of us was like controlling the touchscreen and one of us was watching like the TV. They're like, I can't see when to line up. You'll have to be my eyes. And we kind of almost had a co-op thing going on. It's like, drop it down. And it's like, and then the bomb would fly up and hit him. But it's kind of memories like that just makes me, even though like Gemma said, the bosses maybe weren't that hard overall, but I just felt like they were some clever ideas that made you think outside the box a bit.
Yeah. And definitely used the two screens really well. Like I granted the that one boss battle I was talking about, the Goro Durango or whatever, it didn't use the two screens as well as maybe like the Gliok battle, but and some of the other ones, because like the Glioks, you'd actually see them on the top, and then you'd be deflecting something on the bottom screen. So it was using that space a little bit more. But
yeah, true.
Yeah, it was even that the tall sand guy was, you almost have to have both screens, you know, see the stuff at
he
the
looks
top,
the coolest, I reckon.
He
in terms
does.
Of the way they look, I reckon he looked the coolest.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Cyclops one that you mentioned, Trev, actually that was kind of tough. That was a tough one too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You almost got a like maybe people with certain type of vision maybe are better at it, but like found it hard sometimes to like divide my attention, like I want to be like all or nothing almost. So but
yeah,
no, it was cool. I think they are cool. I don't think the bosses maybe make, you know, top boss list, but by the same token, I don't feel like there was maybe a dud boss. Like a lot of other Zeldas have a couple bosses that are like, yeah, they're just kind of there, but I feel like this had consistently good bosses, even if maybe none of them were like super duper great. They were all consistently good.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely.
All right, let's see here, moving on. Phantom Hourglass has some collectibles, and I feel like for as much as I played and replayed this game, I've never gotten all the gems. I feel like maybe I was able to upgrade Link for one of the gems. Same thing with ship parts. I feel like they're so random when you dig up treasure. Like my ship was kind of like mixed and matched. Like it was pretty ugly. But it's like, oh, this piece looks cool. This piece looks cool. And early customization, you know, in Zelda, sort of a trailblazer, a Zelda game in that sense. But what did you guys think of the collectibles? Did either of you ever 100% this game?
Oh, man. No, I didn't 100% it. Which is typically what I'll do, like, on a second playthrough. I'll kind of play through a game and then 100% on the second time through. But I think in that case, Temple of the Ocean King broke me there with trying to 100% it. But I mean, maybe it shouldn't have, because, you know, obviously there's lots to explore in the world to collect. It seems like there was a lot of stuff you could fish for, wasn't there? There's a lot of there's some like rare, like crazy fish monster things that you could collect, and I don't know if I got all of them, but yeah, there's, you know, different ships you could battle, and I don't know. There was a lot of fun stuff. Like the more I'm thinking about the game, like every time we do one of these episodes, I'm like, I should replay this. You know, like it kind of makes you wish we could play pretty much all of these on the latest Nintendo system. You know, like, hey, if I want to go back, Nintendo, let me give you some money and let me play these games on. You'd think they could almost do it on the Switch too with DS games. You know, you could just have it in switch the screen into vertical mode, like some of those scrolling shooter games do, Trev. You know, the shoot 'em ups, and man, that would be perfect.
That would be cool. Hey, if we keep mentioning it in every podcast. Maybe eventually they will do that.
Yeah.
How much work would it be? Because the touchscreen on the Switch, you need like a capacitive stylus, like where on the DS, you just had that kind of that plastic. Like, I don't know how much work that would be.
Yeah. You'd still have to, you know, it may not be quite as precise because some of the capacitive touch ones, you know, but even with capacitive touch, like they've got, they'd be able to do it with kind of a finer point. You know, it wouldn't need to be too fine, you know, when it's kind of blown up on a larger screen. You know, I think they could do it with a capacitive touch fairly easily.
No, I've seen some of their emulation with I've been hearing, like, with the 64 games.
Yeah.
Come to Switch Online, they're like, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Mixed cool, results. Though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one day we'll get all our Zelda games on one console. I think we just have to keep saying it until someone listens.
Yep.
Over and over and over.
Yeah. But
we'll keep saying it over and over.
Yeah, that's how they listen to us. We just repeat ourselves. But yeah, I definitely did not collect all the ship parts. It was pretty random. I don't even think I had the same type.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That's what I feel like. I felt like maybe it wasn't worth my time investment because there's just no guarantee.
And I didn't notice it really making much of a difference to my ship either. Like, they say if you match the parts better, it's stronger or something. I don't know, but
yeah,
didn't make that much difference. Yeah, I tried. I never really had many matching parts because there's quite a few in each category. There's a good at least 10 or more, right? Some of them have more than others, I think. But there's a lot to collect, which is cool if you like to collect stuff and you have the time, go for it. But I think Justin hit the nail on the head with the temple, the ocean, the temple king. Oh God, the temple of the ocean king. I'll get it right. kind of, you know, running out of steam there and just kind of giving up in the end. I did like the gems though. I like to collect the gems. I don't think I got all of them. I got pretty close.
Yeah, I feel
some
like
of them were. Yeah.
Every time I go and I feel like, oh, I'm ready to, you know, I got enough to upgrade or whatever. And I'm like, oh man, I still need half a dozen more.
Yeah, that's the annoying part. I wish you could just,
color I needed was never the color I got. Like, I felt like I had like before that, like 20 of each, and I'd be like, yeah, 17, 18 of each or whatever. And before
that. Yeah, I think one of them, I was much lower than the other two. It might have been the wisdom ones, I think. Yeah, for some reason, I couldn't get that many wisdom ones. I was pretty good in the other two. But yeah, just they eluded me somehow.
I tell you. Yeah. But I think Gemma mentioned this towards the start of the podcast, but sale-wise, it would seem that Wind Waker was only good for Phantom Hourglass, because Phantom Hourglass sold almost 5 million, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is still the best-selling handheld game. You know, obviously not original handheld game, not talking about like remakes, like Ocarina of Time 3D or anything like that, but
right.
An original handheld game better than, it is tricky because obviously Link's Awakening now has a Switch version, and Switch itself is even a hybrid, but still, 5 million at that point in time.
That's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, true. Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, the sales are very good. I noticed that Spirit Tracks was about half that, I think. I looked it up earlier. It was in the twos. So I don't know if that was a sign of the times with the transition to smartphones, or the DS. I don't know if it was really declining in popularity that quickly, but, or maybe it just wasn't as well received or too samey. I don't know. Maybe for people just don't like the trains.
Is that tricks? So.
Yeah. Ah, right. I had both. Yeah.
Part of the problem.
Yeah.
Blame the Temple of the Ocean King.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I'm looking at the clock here. We got maybe 10 minutes, but I always want to leave time for anything we haven't talked about, whether it's just, the odd fact here or there, some trivia, at any point we haven't covered. So just kind of open up the floor, freestyle here. Chime in with anything you got. And if you don't got anything, I got a few things. All right, too much dead air.
There you go. I like it.
Did you guys play the multiplayer game? I know in the Virtual Console release it's disabled, but did you guys fiddle with that at all?
I don't know that I did.
It was pretty fun. Like, one character would kind of sneak, and then the others would try to, like, catch. Like, I thought it was just a fun little bonus. You know, it wasn't a full-fledged multiplayer thing like Four Swords, but...
And it had,
I don't think I did actually. I know it's there, but I think I tried it. Did everyone need to have the cartridge?
No, because I only have one, but
I think it had download play. So yeah, you didn't only one person needed it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. I'm surprised I didn't try that. Why didn't I try that?
I remember a lot of my friends at the time didn't have the DS. So I think even if I did have the download play as an option, that maybe only a couple friends actually had the DS. More of my friends got the 3DS, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, we had a few DSs around. For me, it was probably more DSs than 3DSs. Like, family members, though, probably more than anything. Like, my sister, and her husband had one, and they're not big gamers, so but they love the DS.
Yeah.
But I don't, they weren't really into Zelda. They're not Zelda people. Like, they're more like, I don't know, mini games, I suppose. They like Mario, maybe Bomberman, stuff like that.
The touch generation games.
The DS really did. I mean, Animal Crossing on the DS. I mean, there's a lot of. There's a lot of games that brought in that kind of that blue ocean strategy of, widening the gamer market,
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. A lot of people. Yeah.
Just like with the Wii, not the DS.
There actually was Phantom Hourglass DS model. Kind of like, I feel like they always do that with Zelda. Like, they'll have a system kind of tied in with the game. But there was a gold DS with a Triforce emblem, I think, on the front, or maybe the back, maybe it was both.
Was it a DS Lite, or was it
you're right, it was a DS Lite, actually.
The DS Lite was one of my favorite designs. Man, what a, it was a really slick design. Like when that came out, like the original DS design, I think it was better than the one that they showed at E3 that before it launched in the US. But I don't know, like the black and silver, I was like, it was very big and clunky looking. But man, that DS Lite was just so slick. I had the
DS Fat.
Yeah, the DS Fat. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I had the DS Lite that was like the white one, and it was kind of translucent on top of it, you know? and man, that was probably my favorite handheld.
Yeah. It was so portable and small. Yeah, it was just perfect size, really.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Yeah.
I do miss it. As much as I enjoy the Switch, I do miss having a dedicated portable.
I would take a Switch Micro, guys. A Switch Mini or a Switch Micro. Man, that would be so cool.
How about a Switch that's like their Game Gear keychains? They're like an inch big.
Yeah. Maybe not that small, but but yeah, it seemed like you could do one that would be pretty, it would still be pretty fun. You know, in a tiny form factor. Maybe someday, Nintendo.
And I want it in 4K.
yes. 4K.
Frames locked.
Yeah. Glasses free 3D as an option, of course.
make it affordable.
Make it affordable. I feel like we're
the tough part.
I feel like we're Homer when he's designing his car. You know, it needs six cup holders and.
And you can never find a horn when you need one.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, cucaracha.
Yes, exactly. So good.
That's good. I would like to bring back. Yeah.
And this was going back. This was probably the last anniversary, the 30th anniversary, I guess. But you remember, I think it was to Kotaku maybe, but Anuma said Phantom Hourglass was actually his favorite Zelda game. You guys remember that?
No.
It's a random bit of trivia, and I know this, or I remember this, because I looked up for the 30th anniversary, we did Zelda Retrospective for PNM, and I wrote a little bit about Phantom Hourglass, and I had that as like a fun fact, I think.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think it's his favorite, I think, because of maybe the time in his life or whatever. I don't think it's so much for just overall design, but there's a little bit of fun trivia. Look it up. Anuma said Phantom Hourglass was his favorite Zelda game.
Wow.
I would like, and I think we mentioned this during Wind Waker's podcast, that I'd love to see them bring back Toon Link. You know, it's been a while since we've seen a full-fledged game from him. So, yeah, I'd love to see another one in that kind of series.
Yeah, yep. I would love to see basically a new original handheld Zelda. I think that would be that'd be really cool. Granted, the Switch is a hybrid system, so they would make it for the Switch, and it would be on console too. But you know, it's some sort of a lower budget Zelda game. You know, it kind of stinks we've had to wait 5+ years for Breath of the Wild 2. It was always nice when they had the handheld systems going. You could always count on them doing kind of a side Zelda, you know.
That's true. That's really been missing, and we've had a few re-releases, like remakes or whatever, like this year. Was it two this year or one this year, one last year? We had two anyway. But they're not
Sword and Calamity, I guess, but that was more of a
and then
was that last year? That might have even been last year.
And then Link's Awakening and if they alternated like every, you know, 2.5 years, there's like a top-down Zelda, you know, like, hey, this continues the spirit of, you know, the top-down Zeldas. And then, you know, so like basically every 5 years you would have, and then it would, so for fans, we'd get a game every 2.5, but development wise, they could kind of, you know, still space things out and alternate between 3D and 2D or something, but.
Yeah, well, 5 years is a long time. You're right, actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think about that it's been that long, but it has been. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's... Oh, here's just absolutely random trivia. You know what the Phantom Hourglass is called in Korea?
No.
What's that?
Called the Hourglass of Illusion.
Huh. Interesting.
Isn't that
kind of cool?
That's mysterious. Sounding. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Phantom Hourglass can sound scary because you think of the phantoms, you know, chasing you. But
yep.
Hourglass of Illusion sounds more merry and light.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. That's
And of course, I guess this isn't the last Rick sequel because Spirit Tracks, I think, is a maybe doesn't follow up immediately after Phantom Hourglass, but it is set in that same world. So,
yeah.
We'll talk about that next time.
Cool.
That's about all I got. Dustin, you wanna bring this home?
Yeah. Well, thanks, Gemma. Thanks, Trev, for hopping back on and talking about Phantom Hourglass. Man, like I was saying, it seems like every time we talk about one of these, I'm like, man, it's been a while since I've played this. What am I doing? So I'm hoping Nintendo gets around to those DS games on the Switch. Make it happen. And next time we'll be talking about Spirit Tracks. So until next time. See you, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.